All right, one more clap. Welcome back to the pod. We got Madeline Elise on the podcast. I don't know how to introduce her besides she's a pop star, a dancer, a model. Any other way you would describe yourself?
Wow, I mean, that was good.
Okay, cool.
I'll take that intro. Titles that maybe I don't even know if I'm allowed to claim, but I'll take that.
No, I mean, just to give y'all context, I met her while I was DJing at a speakeasy. And her best friend requested a song, and it ended up being her song. So I listened to the song. I never, like, just play SoundCloud rappers' music, right? But I listened to her song. I was like, holy shit, this is actually pretty fucking good. Played it. I added it to my playlist, and I've since played it at many of my own gigs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
You'd be the first, so.
I love to hear that.
Yeah. And by the way, her best friends and her entourage is behind the camera.
I got my friends.
I'll give them a chance again if they want us to come say hi, because I'll include them, but they don't want to come on.
They're suddenly shy. I don't know what that's about, but.
No, you rolled in deep. She came in. Like, that's how you know you can claim being a pop star. You came in with an entourage.
Yeah.
Like, you're certified. So to give like a second intro, you were diagnosed with ADHD as soon as you released your most recent song, Elementary?
During the pandemic, I realized why is life getting so difficult for me when I lost a lot of my routine. And that was something that I kind of always understood was like, I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm ADHD. But I started going back to therapy at the time and just kind of working through everything else. And that sort of came along with it that was like, hey, this actually explains a lot of why you're so frustrated with yourself all the time. And you should maybe not be shooting all over yourself all the time because your brain just works a different way.
Yeah.
And so it was a large part of my therapy. And so I ended up writing a song about it, Elementary. But the funny thing that happened when I released that song is I messed up the album artwork in the most like scrambled brain ADHD way possible that I had like procrastinated the album artwork. And so I posted about that and I was like, this song, it just rings so true. Like if you didn't believe that this was not genuinely true from my heart, this proves it. So
how soon after the song's release did you get diagnosed?
I was actually diagnosed before. So in like 2020. So it's been a few years that I've had that. And so I wrote that song actually 3 years ago. And then I had recorded it like 2-3 years ago. And then I realized I hated it. So I went back and redid the production. I had then met my producer that I work with now, Hamza. And I took it to him and was like, okay, I like the lyrics and I like everything about it, but the chorus like needs something and I don't know what it is other than it needs like this. and he took it and ran with that and thankfully understood what I meant by just being like, it needs and gave it in that in the chorus. And so I was like, yes, this is it now. So then we went back and retracked the vocals just earlier this year and then released the one that's out now.
Gotcha. And Hamza, he's your producer for every song you've made so far?
No, he actually done my first track that I released. I co-produced that one with my like childhood friend from Oregon. His name's Manny Humley. His band is We Three, and they're like absolutely killing it right now.
That was my favorite song that you did.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the one I repeatedly play.
Well, have you checked out We Three stuff? Have you heard of them yet? Okay. They're more in like the, I wouldn't technically say singer songwriter. They're still very pop, but they're a little bit more in the singer songwriter genre than I am. But their stuff is so good and they're incredibly talented and they're killing it. So definitely check them out.
Yeah.
But we were both back home during the pandemic. And so I was there helping take care of my mom after she'd had surgery. And him and I were like, let's just like make some music. Like I've been wanting to get into it and he had all the equipment. So we ended up writing Done. Turns out we were both going through the same like relationship struggle at the time, but the thing with like him and I, we were close friends, but we don't really like talk about stuff. And so it just kind of came out in the songwriting.
You communicated through the music.
Yeah. Awesome. So he helped me with that one and he did such a great job. I took that one later and recorded in LA and tracked the vocals in a studio because I finished it up and I was like, I just feel like I don't know what I'm doing with recording at home and I didn't have the equipment that I have now. And I was like, honestly, it would be worth it to just go into a studio, learn how to do it, see how it gets mixed and tracked and all of that. And so I got
How'd you end up working in LA? Like going to a studio in LA?
Well, you can just book studios in LA. I feel like not enough people take advantage of that. It really wasn't, I mean, obviously I spent money on it, but it wasn't as expensive as I thought it was going to be. And I called up Westlake Studios. It's on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. That's a pretty like iconic recording studio. And I thought like, there's no way that I would be able to really get a time slot in it, but might as well call them. So I called and pretended to be my assistant. And they had an opening for me, booked it the next week. And so I flew out to go record there. And when I get there to the studio, they had called in an older house engineer that doesn't even work there anymore. He used to be their house engineer, but he's absolutely killer. And they called him in because they were like, this person called and like her assistant scheduled it. And I think they thought I was somebody who was like important or like had more money than I have. And so they called him in, and now we've gotten to work together on some other stuff, and he's super cool. So it was like perfect timing how it all panned out. So I got to record that one there and learn a lot of stuff. And they even had issues with the computer in the small studio that I had booked. And so they put me in the big studio in that space. So I got to record done on the same table that Michael Jackson recorded Thriller on.
Holy shit.
Which was like wild. So cool. And I was like, literally anybody can just come in here and record if they want. no one knows that, I guess.
How did you find that insight? Because anyone that's following you that might also want to do similar things like you, I mean, to even know that that's a step that they can take, just price range wise, like what'd you drop on that one?
At the time, I don't think the rates are the same now because everything has gone up in the last couple of years. At the time, it was $75 an hour.
Oh, that's so, like the same prices as Dallas. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really the same. And it was also like, it depends on how quick you can get your takes. I mean, when I recorded that, I spent quite a bit of time in the studio because I was new to learning how to record and honestly was still finding my vocal tone. And I've improved a lot since then. That was 3 years ago. But if you can get things nailed out pretty quick, I mean, it doesn't cost that much. And if you're working with a good engineer, you're not going to require a whole lot of mix afterwards because they're going to do a pretty good job getting you EQ'd out as they go, and you can comp with them right there in the studio if you have enough time, and it's worth the money, honestly.
How long did it take you?
For that one, we spent at least 4 hours.
Okay.
Tracking vocals on that one. I think all in, we probably spent about 6 because then we comped and did harmonies and all that.
Yeah, I'm assuming you came and prepared so you can maximize the studio time and you just mastered your song right there.
Yeah, I tried to. My vocal coach is also out in LA. That I usually just do like Zoom sessions with her. Shout out to Terry Danz. She's killer. But she came with me to the studio to like help me kind of track things correctly and make sure I was getting the most out of what I was doing. Because I truly at that time had not really found my tone and my placement of where it needed to be for pop because I'm very classically trained. So I was singing very back in the back of my throat instead of sitting forward and my tone where it actually is. And so she kind of worked with me through that in the studio. And now it doesn't take me as long to track vocals for recordings, thankfully. So it's a learn as you go process, and I'm just getting started.
Yeah. And have you recorded pretty much all your songs that are released on Spotify in LA?
Let's see. No. Talk About Love. I recorded quite a bit of that in my closet here in Dallas, actually. Nice. Tracked the most of the vocals. I did the top line of the chorus I recorded with Hamza in Los Angeles. He went to Icon College for music there. And so we had access to studio space, which was really great for free. So we got to go in there and record some of that. And then we retracked Elementary's vocals in the studio as well. And Nightmare, that's about to come out next month. That one, we did most of those. We did some of the vocals, honestly, just at his house.
Yeah, you had a sneak peek of that, right?
Yeah.
Where is that on?
Well, right now I don't have a sneak peek that you can check out until it comes out. Uh-huh. I've been kind of like posting teasers on my Instagram and my TikTok. Yeah. Maddie Moves on TikTok. But yeah, we've been dropping a little bit of sneak peeks. I feel like I've had to tread really lightly. I don't know how people are posting sneak peeks of their music, because then as soon as it's released, the copyright strikes kick in. So I'm still learning how to navigate that, because when you work with like a label or somebody else who's helping you, they have other tricks, I think, to get around the pre-release stuff. But anyhow, it comes out on September 21st. So I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but it might already be.
It will be out in September.
All right. Okay. So.
So, I mean, yeah, navigating a lot as an artist. I mean, there's an unlimited amount. Who do you work with the most and the closest? I'm assuming that'd be your producer, right?
Yeah, for the most part. Right now, a lot of the songs that we've been working on, I do most of the songwriting. I don't play instruments that well, but enough to like track some chords or whatever and then kind of give him an idea. But mostly I'll just send over vocals to him and he'll build some stuff. Sometimes we'll start with tracks with him first. And then we have a couple other friends that he works with regularly that'll chime in on other production stuff or songwriting. I have a couple other friends that are just songwriters. That's all they do. And so sometimes I'll hop in a session with them and work on writing. Just, I feel like I'm still very much learning. So anytime I get to work with other people, I'm like, yeah, put me in the room. I would love to be the least knowledgeable person in the room, so I can definitely see what everybody else is doing and work with them. But yeah, Hamza's most of who I'm spending time with on getting stuff.
Okay. How did you find him, and what does it cost you to work with him?
So I found him in a really funny way. Like a year and a half ago, I was just out at a bar here in Dallas, and there was a girl who was hanging out there. She's like an Instagram blogger, kind of like influencer. That's what she does. And I had an extra espresso martini, so I took it over to her and was like, this girl's got an interesting story. I've got an extra espresso martini. And
that's such a good way to bond.
If you know Dallas girls, especially the blogger type, they're not going to turn down an espresso martini. I mean,
it was trendy too, so she could actually blog it on Instagram.
She did post it. Yeah.
These are the tricks for any of your followers. I want to do the same thing as you. That's how you network.
You just schmooze, you know, espresso martinis. Get them jazzed and relaxed at the same time. But yeah, so I just like struck up a conversation with her, and we were just chatting about what I do, and I told her that I'm a musician, and she was like, oh, my friend is a producer and he's super cool, you guys should meet. And at this point it was later in the evening, so I was like, I don't know what the validity is to this, sure, link me up, I'll always take a connection. And so she did connect me with somebody who, I guess he lives in Colorado, and he's like kind of back and forth to LA to do music. And he kind of brushed me off a little bit, and like, not in a rude way at all, but it was just kind of like, you know, I don't know what his connection is to this girl that I met at all. But he's like, I actually have a friend who's in college and he's kind of at the same stage of getting started like you are. And I think you guys would work really well together. So I was like, cool. Yeah. Link me with another newbie. Like, that's great.
Did you take any precautions? Cause like, as an attractive female trying to make it in a creative world, yeah, I'm sure you have to be wary of that.
I mean, that stuff happens, but I feel like once you start talking with somebody, especially when it comes to music and producing, you know really quickly if they're like full of crap or if they actually know what they're talking about. And so, I mean, he passed me off and I had a couple Zoom calls. It was Hamza that he introduced me to, and we song wrote over Zoom a couple times before I met with him in person, and I felt I used to live in LA, and so I kind of like was staying with my friend when I went to go meet up with him later. And so I felt safe about it, but he's also just like the kindest human, and he's so sweet. And so after I did like one video session with him, I was like, oh, this guy's so cool. And he's just getting started too. So I'm like excited to jump in with him kind of at the beginning.
How long ago was that?
It was like a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So really fresh.
I checked him out on TikTok and his work is pretty good. So I'll even link him because, I mean, again, if they're following you to learn, they'd want to know these steps. So recording and getting the master product out, like LA Studio, just flying out. It's good for clout, obviously, too. You get some content out of it. But having a producer that, like, I'm telling you, like, yeah, this shit is good. Like, for me to still, again, to this day, you're the only person I play out on other gigs. I mean, it's a good vibe no matter where I'm at.
I dig that. That's awesome. I love to hear that.
What influence would you say your mom has on you or your parents in general throughout this career?
My parents have always been very encouraging of everything. I moved to LA when I was 19 to pursue dance, actually, and against my parents' wishes a little bit. They would have wished I would have picked something, you know, like gone to college and done the thing. But at the end of the day, they were like, this is our determined daughter, so we better get behind her because she's going to do it. So they've always had my back and supported me with that. And now with music, I mean, I grew up doing music. I was a choir kid. All of their years of paying for voice lessons, I hope eventually pay off here. But they've always been really supportive, and they're rooting for me and excited about it. My dad is like total, like, he has perfect pitch. He honestly, I don't know why he never really pursued music in any other way. He doesn't, I guess I recently learned that he did know how to play violin when he was a kid. Never even talked about it. I'm like, Dad, you could probably pick up instruments and learn them because he has such good pitch with his ears. But he's kind of like, that's what you and your sister do. I'm like, okay.
That might be one of the reasons he supported you. It's like, usually parents might not want that. If they're kind of a bad parent, they might not want their kid to live out the dream that they always had. But it looks like he was self-aware enough. But also to give some context, Maddie has a YouTube channel from like 13 years ago.
Oh, you found Maddie Mayo.
100%. So her parents have also had a good amount of proof that she's not just, you know, she's not just doing this just to do it.
Yeah, my parents, they were so mad when they found that YouTube channel. I was like 12. and like posting dance videos on YouTube in my bedroom.
You were fucking like, good too. Again, dancing. Like I have no reason to say nice things to you.
But, those ones were not good. I mean, we got better over the years, thank God. But you know, I was a 12-year-old dancing and not like the 12-year-olds now. Like I feel like 12-year-olds now have a whole other standard.
The fucking pop lock and shit was fucking amazing. It was on beat. Yeah, you did great.
Well, other people must have thought so because by the time, like my parents were very private about it and were like, we're not, you know, they didn't want me to participate in social media. I wasn't allowed to have MySpace or anything like that. But I hopped on YouTube and I didn't tell them and they found it. But by the time they found it, one of my videos had like popped off because I'd posted to a Justin Bieber song and it was the same time period where Justin Bieber was very fresh. And so it was kind of that YouTube era. And so I had like a million views on it by the time they found it. And they were like, bring us your laptop right now. Show us this YouTube channel. What did you do? Because somebody at work had told my mom they found my videos. And so I like bring my laptop and like show them. I'm like, yeah, those are my dance videos. Please don't make me delete it. And my mom was like, no, Madeline, you cannot be on the internet like this. This is, you don't know who's watching you. And she gives me the whole mom spiel. And my dad is like, hold on, Cheryl, hold on. He like grabs the laptop and he goes, is that how many views? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, there's a million views on this video. It's like, yeah, people like my dance videos. I don't. So my dad was like, okay, we can keep doing this, but I'm going to help you with it. There we want all of your logins. We're going to read your messages before you do. We're putting filters on, like we're reading the comments and like filtering them out before you can read them. And so they were very hands on with it. And then after a little while, we started going, my dad like got a camera and it was like the Canon T3i, you know, back when those were the big brand new fancy vlog cameras.
That's adorable. He invested in you.
Yeah. And he was like in the backyard helping me film dance videos and like was always there helping me with it. And it got to the point where I had a website that I'd built out like a very crappy HTML website.
Yeah.
And my dad was like helping me make t-shirts and like things. So there's some Mini Maddie Mayo t-shirts that exist out there. We sold some, but he was like, he was behind it. He was excited about it with me. So they're very supportive.
No, that's fucking beautiful. Other than that, previous to him finding your talents, how was childhood besides that?
Good. I'm very lucky and blessed to have the childhood that I had. I have an older sister who's 5 years older than me and we're like super close. We grew up just the absolute best friends. And so I always had her kind of looking out for me in my life. And I grew up around music and dance and my parents always made sure that I had the ability to do that and to go take dance classes and voice lessons when I wanted to. I was a private school kid up until about high school. And then I really did not like the private school that I was in. And then I ended up going to public school. My parents very much tried to give me all of the best opportunity that they could. They did a really awesome job. I was very, very lucky.
What's stopping you from going full-time into music? Because it sounds like you were kind of, you had the tools for it, you know? And you still, you obviously do.
The income.
Yeah.
It takes a really long time for music to start paying off. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those things. It's like you got to invest for a really long time and really build up a fan base that's going to be there to support you. So I'm just not there yet, but you know, hopefully we get there. So you got to have the day job to support the day dream. And that's what we do, you know?
Yeah. Take her advice on that. Cause I did not listen to any of that at all and absolutely suffered just not being practical. So that's one of the things I wanted to talk to her about. Cause I do feel like she's approaching it with the right mindset. So the way I did it, just straight out of high school, I may or may not allegedly have been selling drugs. Graduated high school a year
allegedly.
Early. Yeah, allegedly. Again, you're the one that signed the contract. I'm good.
It wasn't an NDA.
Shit. We'll have our producers rework that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I graduated early just because I just didn't want to be there. I wasn't smart or anything. And then I dove headfirst into starting my first company, Exotic Drive Club. It was a passion project, just herding millionaires together and doing events with their exotic cars. They ended up throwing money at it. Sponsors wanted to sponsor events, you know, be digital, take all those steps to it. But I quit my job and just used my entire savings to fund everything, like just every single event. Yeah, my money disappeared like within probably like 4 months. And for some reason, I guess just being young, you know, like being 18 at that time, you just have the ego attached to it and your parents already know about it. So all you want to do is continue it and hope that it works out because now your entire ego is attached to it. Don't recommend that. It led me to extreme alcohol abuse. I eventually got into drugs and it took me the longest time to ever come back from it. So now I'm 8 months sober. My life just began at 26. Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's awesome. Eight months. That's not an easy feat.
No, especially as a DJ. Like, that's terrifying.
Yeah. You're just surrounded by it all the time.
Yeah. It was the worst mistake. Like, get into DJing, do self-help, avoid the hookup culture, not drink and don't do drugs, but still be out and lead the party. Like, that's,
yeah, and still play the part of somebody who is probably participating in that.
You can't just stare at your computer and just be like, I love this, but my face looks like I hate every second of it.
Yeah.
Just because I want to feel buzzed too.
Do you find yourself still getting fulfillment from DJing, or do you feel yourself resenting it a little bit now?
No resentment towards it, but the passion I have for DJing, it's like, it's kind of like a 10 out of 10 high when I'm doing it in front of people, but I've always wanted more. And it's just like, okay, if I can make a living DJing, that's cool. I would rather do that because I promised myself never to do anything just for money again. But, you know, we still got to find the happy medium, right?
So yeah, we all got to survive.
Yeah, exactly. So while DJing, and luckily it paid for my living, I always knew I wanted to do this, like podcasting. I did it 6 years ago, and then I just stopped, drank my heart out, got into drugs, did all that, and just avoided it, didn't confront myself. So you're in therapy. If it wasn't for the combination of therapy and going sober, I wouldn't be doing this. And like, even right now, I'm at a 10 out of 10 high. Whether my face shows it or not, like, this is exactly what I've wanted to do. Even if we weren't doing the podcast, this is exactly what I would talk to you about off record. That's just what I do 24/7. I'm just inquisitive about people. I'm trying to figure them out. So I don't regret what I did, because everyone has their own path. But you being stable, like, I mean, when do you have to make that decision? Like 18, like in high school, when did you make the decision to go practical?
I think it's a little bit in my nature to always want some stability, I think. And so I'm not, I mean, I guess I'm more of a risk taker than other people, but stability is important to me. And so when I moved to LA when I was 19, I stayed back for a year, for a gap year, and all my friends left for college, and I just worked. I worked 7 part-time jobs. And saved up. Yeah, I wish I was exaggerating. I actually had 7 jobs at one time.
Yeah, because it's LA and you just also left all your friends.
Well, I did it in Oregon before I moved away, actually. I stayed home. I lived with mom and dad for another year and just like worked my absolute ass off. And I saved up just shy of like 10 grand and moved in August of, what was it, 2015? And by the time I'd gotten, like when I was ready, I was like, okay, this is it. Like I had already like submitted to leave for work. I had put in my 2 weeks at all my jobs and everything. And I was like, okay, it's time. I had a roommate that was going to go with me, and she ended up backing out kind of last second, 'cause she was like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to afford it. And I was like, dude, like we just have to do it. Like I've been working so hard for like a year. We're going. And I was like, fine, I'm going to go. And so I just like late at night, I'm like dragging a suitcase up the stairs. Like then my mom's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm leaving. I'm going to Hollywood. It's like, whoa. Please, wait, just wait. Let me call your sister. She can drive you down. So my sister lives in Seattle. My parents live just outside of Portland. So my sister and her husband drove down to meet me at my parents, and we drove out at like early hour in the morning to drive to Los Angeles. And I just had a suitcase and my little Nissan Sentra, and I was like, I'll figure it out. It'll be fine. And so I stayed in a dance dorm when I moved down there. They just had a bunk bed for like 2 weeks. And I think that life lesson of having that, of how I just threw myself into it, because when you're 19, you don't know what it means to fail yet. You have no idea. Like, you have no idea what falling on your face means. You have no idea what it means to actually not have any money and not be able to feed yourself. I mean, I didn't at 19. I think because I was fortunate enough to have a really good childhood, I was never of concern for those things. So I think I learned that lesson quickly. I got to Los Angeles and I found a job and a roommate within that 2 weeks, and I was able to like make it and scrape by. But I was eating ramen and doing the thing, you know, and my $10,000 that I saved up, I mean, it went fast.
Yeah.
Because, you know, rent in Los Angeles is expensive. And then, you know, after like a few months, I was sitting there talking to my friend who moved at the same time. And I was like, dude, I don't know where my savings went. I don't understand. I haven't been doing anything. Like, everybody else is like going out and spending money on all these things. I never eat out. I never do, like, I barely buy groceries and I barely put gas in my car. Like, I don't understand how I'm going to keep doing this, because I'm not making enough money.
And yeah, that's heartbreaking when your entire savings goes by while you're trying to make it and no progress has been made. I completely understand that.
Yeah. And my parents are always, you know, they were like, call us if you need help. Like, they're always, we're willing to help me, but I am very stubborn and determined, and sometimes to my detriment, but I'm like, no, I'm, I said, I was going to do this. I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to figure this out. I'm not calling mom and dad for help. So I think that taught me that lesson. I've carried through for the next, what's it been, 8 years now. And I'm like, okay, if I can do that, I'll be fine. I just need to like make sure that I'm taking care of myself and making the right decisions. So, and I'm at the crossroads of moving back to Los Angeles again, now at 27. And now I'm like, okay, I'm going to plan this out. We're going to have this the right way. And I'm going to make sure I take care of myself. So just having that perspective, I think I learned a lot of lessons really quickly, but Los Angeles will do that to you. So.
Yeah, that's kind of one of those like therapy lessons of showing yourself enough accolades in your life early on.
Yeah.
To where you end up believing yourself. You know it's possible. I'm assuming you weren't in therapy that young, right? When did you start therapy?
I was in therapy a bit when I was 17, 18. I've always struggled with depression and anxiety. and so I really went through it when I was like a senior in high school. I struggled with it a lot. And so my parents, out of fear that I was going to take my own life, they put me in therapy. And I don't think I really utilized it very well at the time because I was like, I hated them. I resented the fact that I was in therapy. I just was like, I don't want to be here. So I don't think, you know, I didn't really open up or use it. So I was like, this is the therapist that my mom found for me. And she's going to tell my mom everything. And I can't actually talk about the fact that I'm struggling. So I had gone through a little bit of it that way, but I grew up in Oregon, which is like very much hippy dippy land, and which I love. I say that in a fond way. So I grew up in a space where it was a little bit more normal to talk about that kind of stuff and to be open. And my friends would have conversations with me about mental health issues. And I feel like that's not as common being here in Texas, just my understanding of the culture here. And I never went to high school here, but I can assume that was not very much.
100%. It is not like that at all.
Yeah. And not as comfortable.
Yeah. And I appreciate you giving that context that it was like that for you. I mean, those are things that fundamentally shape how you approach life. So I am glad you had that.
Yeah, I am too. I think that gave me it gave me also a level of compassion, I think, for people around me, because I just understand that side of, I have a little bit more of an emotional intelligence built in because I didn't have to learn things the hard way. Because people are just a little bit more open and they'll talk about stuff there. And here, I feel like in Texas, I've noticed a lot of people are very like, toughen up, like tough, that's tough, like figure it out, you know, which is one way to look at life. You know, I mean, there's definitely sometimes where you do need to, you know, get yourself going. But
yeah, there's definitely a balance of like millennial and Gen Z type of view or Gen X. But I mean, even in your childhood, you said your parents were pretty good. The childhood was pretty good. So your attachment style was probably not that horrible for anyone that knows attachment style theory. But you obviously struggled. You said senior year. I mean, if you don't mind getting into it, like what were some of the struggles?
I honestly, to give so much information about myself, a lot of my mental health issues I came to understand were very much tied to my hormones. And so as a woman, every month I would just kind of hit this like depths of despair. And so it was kind of a struggle because my parents are very religious. And so the doctors were like, we should probably put her on birth control to kind of even this out. And that's probably going to help with a lot of the anxiety that's coming up. Because it was like every time I had my period, that was like where it was. And so we, you know, kind of worked on that. My mom was really advocated for me and I'm thankful for that. And it just kind of hit a point where I think it just was like those teenage years where like everything is just unstable. Even if your life is stable, you just like the teenage angst boils over at some point. And, you know, I have a history of mental health in my family. And so that's was not a surprise. And my sister also kind of struggled with that when she was a teen. And so, yeah, I hit just a really bad depression where like I really told myself that nobody cared. And that everybody would be better without me, which was very much not the truth, but that's the lies that your brain tells itself when you're in it. And so I had an attempt where I did try to kill myself. And then I came to find out you actually can't OD on Xanax. So I picked the dumbest way to try to do that. Cause I was like, I'll just fall asleep. It'll be fine. And then I took one hell of a nap.
Can't even do that right.
And damn. I woke up. Yeah. And I was like, I'm so stupid. I can't even kill myself. Like, this is like absolutely ridiculous. And I was like, I woke up just angry at the world. And
it was like that Thea Von clip. Like, what'd you do? You just got better. Like you just slept better.
Yeah. Literally. Yeah. And so, and thankfully I was that stupid and I didn't like try to Google it. I also, I remember being in that headspace and being like, I can't Google this because like someone's going to find out. Yeah. And then like, I'm going to be in trouble and like still be here and stuck. But thankfully that didn't work out. And now I've gone through it a bit more as I've gotten older because it's something that never goes away. I mean, once you, if you're somebody who struggles with depression and anxiety, things like that, that is just a portion of how your brain operates. And so you have to learn the tools to help yourself with it and get through it. And so thankfully I've learned a lot of tools. And so I'm now, you know, as an adult, been like, you know what? I think therapy is good because I can feel it when it creeps back up. And so I know those inklings when they come. And so I am able to jump in on that and take care of it before it gets to the depths of despair to where it's hard to pull yourself out of. So I think having the openness to it in my childhood has helped me a lot as an adult, that I understand that I'm like, you know what, if my arm started hurting after I fell on it, I would go to the doctor and be like, maybe this is broken. I'm not really sure. Well, okay, I had a major life event and everything changed and I'm feeling not so great. Maybe my brain's a little broken at the moment. Like maybe I need to seek some help. And so
that's such a good view. I mean, you couldn't have said it any better. I mean, we seek help and advice for everything that has to do with our physical and external self, but everything that controls that inside us, we just shame it to death.
Yeah.
And that's why so many are suffering and not doing anything they enjoy, which is kind of like the theme of this podcast. I just talk to people that are doing something they enjoy and their journey throughout. And so I'm happy therapy was a part of yours. Like even for me in high school, freshman, sophomore year, I was a bit suicidal. A lot of things happened, but I never made the attempt. So I appreciate you like sharing context on your story enough to where like, yeah, it was that rough for you where you even made the attempt. I had like counselors in school that were just trying to kind of help me out a little bit, but it really didn't seem like they knew what they were doing.
They mean well, but
yeah. The counselors there were not that great, but your therapy, when your mom prescribed it to you, like at what, 18, right? Mm-hmm.
I think it was 18, maybe I was 17.
Yeah. And of course you had your preconceived notions on it, but how that ended up working for you, did it help?
You know, to be quite honest, I don't remember a whole lot of it. I think I was really in that headspace of the depths of despair in that time. Like I was so deep in the depression that there's a good several months of my life right there that I don't remember very much of, other than a glimpse of it. So I don't remember much of what we talked about in therapy, but I do remember being honestly a bit of an asshole to that therapist. And I don't even remember her name, but I still feel like I should apologize to her because the poor woman was just trying to do her job. And I just
fuck my counselor. She was shit.
Yeah. Well, I also think the counselor that my mom found for me, she definitely took a religious approach. And so I think that made me angry even more because my parents were very religious and I was in the church and was very much like I was a camp counselor. I sang on the worship team at church. Like I was very involved in it at that time of my life. But I had a lot of hate about just the circumstances, and people were like, oh, you can just pray about it. Like pray, like give your anxiety to God. And I'm like, that's not how any of this works. Like that I tried that and God either hates me or that's not what anxiety is. I mean, that's not what anxiety is. So I gave her a hard time, I think, because she took a very religious approach. But
I'm pretty sure that's against ethics to even do that. So I'm kind of on your side on that.
Yeah, I think, well, there's therapists that specialize. You know, you can find therapists that specialize in certain things. And so it's important when you're seeking therapy, you know, if you're somebody who wants a therapist that's more open about maybe they're trained better for LGBTQ issues, things like that, you can find. Or if you're religious, I mean, you would want somebody who is religious also, because they'll kind of help you relate when you're talking about God or, oh, I was at church on Sunday and this happened, and they'll be able to have a better conversation with it. So it's a little bit against ethics when it's not the therapist you picked for yourself.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, I think it is a thing though. She did specialize in that.
Yeah. And both of us probably have the same perspective. We're not against religion. We don't hate anyone that's religious, but when we're asking for help or help is being brought to us, just anyone with ulterior motives in any category, whether it's religion or just whatever you're trying to get out of it, that's heartbreaking. I mean, if you weren't already down on bad times, someone comes in with ulterior motives trying to manipulate your brain because they have more expertise in that, and then they throw that at you. I mean, that's not fun.
Yeah, and I also think it gives a skewed idea of God, that if you're like, oh, we're going to pray about it. And yeah, I think prayer helps it, but I also think prayer is a form of meditation. So it does help with mental health issues in that sense. And if that's something that helps you, that's great. For me, that wasn't really where I found my solace in it, but I think it gives kind of the wrong idea that God gave us tools, God gave us brains to use, and we have professionals that can help us. So I think there's nothing wrong with seeking help from somebody that's not pursuing it in a religious way to say, well, no, we're smart enough to figure this out. And, you know, that's not disregarding God.
And to speak to her entourage behind the scenes, you guys are welcome to have anything in the bar, by the way. Just feel free to make yourself at home.
Ooh, go rogue.
Yeah.
There's quite a bar. Yeah. I mean, let's make some pina coladas.
100%. Throw down. Get the entourage.
She's like, yeah.
Best friends in the back going ham. But yeah, speaking of friends, it seems like you've attracted a really good group of friends just in modern times. I mean, for sure, Christina, one of your entourage members, putting me onto the song, requesting it inside a, you know, club venue, having me play it. And then she just also shares everything you do on social media. She's coming with you as like security.
Shout out.
So that's what you have currently. I don't know much about context about your other friend that's a little shy.
Andrea.
Yes.
Let's call her out.
But I mean, everyone seems sweet, supportive, and it seems like none of you have any angst against each other, where I see that in a lot of friend groups where someone is kind of climbing the ropes to success because people always support you while you're going up. But then once you're up, they're like, oh, you made it. I don't want that. You know?
Yeah.
So it seems like you have a good, stable group of friends that will probably support you through the whole way. Was that always the case for you?
You know, I've been very blessed that I have had a lot of wonderful people in my life always. And I have found myself with a really incredible friend group out here in Dallas that's been so supportive.
That's right. I forget you moved so much.
Yeah. Well, not that much. But yeah, I had a great friend group out in LA that I've thankfully been able to keep up with over the years. And everyone's super supportive. But I think we all kind of have the same idea that, you know, it doesn't really make sense to be jealous of your friends because their success is your success too. And so a lot of my friends that I have out here, they don't do music. So it's just not even their wheelhouse or something that they focus on. And so we're able to be excited about each other in our life endeavors. And Christina will give me my shout outs when it comes to music. And I'm like super stoked for her and her home buying journey and everything that she's doing and like growing in her career. And same with Andrea, and we talk about work and she goes, and we get to just chat about each areas of success with each other. And I think that's something that's just really awesome that I have found a solid group of friends. I don't really have any bad seeds in the group of friends that wouldn't have well wishes for me, because I don't have any friends that I don't have well wishes for. I truly want the best for everybody in my life. And so I think I get that in return.
Yeah, 100%. And that's a great point on like levels of success, right? We all have a different viewpoint of success, but those angst friends might view it as levels of success when it really is just what's your view of success, right?
Different so, path.
I mean, yeah, your friends, one might be about family and more of a stable, just life, right? Yours might be the creative endeavor and making that happen, however you do. I think that's just super important to just have a group of friends that really view things like that, you know, similar like-mindedness. I'm very glad you found that. You said it wasn't really a problem for you to make friends while you were moving around either.
You know, I struggled for a long time out here in Dallas because I think the culture here is so different. And so honestly, my closest friends that are out here, none of them grew up in Texas. And so I think that that does speak to just kind of a difference in culture. But I think as a woman in Dallas, it was very different making friends because a lot of people grow up here and they tend to stay kind of in the area. It's not as common. I mean, like in LA, nobody's really from LA. Everybody moved there. So it's kind of an easy starting point to make friends with people. And out here, people will be like, oh yeah, this is my friend. I've been friends with her since preschool, which is super cool. But then everybody kind of has their established friend groups already. And so as an adult, I moved out here and was like, it's not like, you know, you meet people going to school, you know, like how do you make friends? And I'm really social outgoing. Here I'm sitting on a couch with you.
Only meeting you once and you're in the home.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm pretty like sociable in that sense, but I did struggle for quite some time. And now I feel like Dallas has hit a point in the city where it's like growing. There's so many people here that have moved that are transplants. Mm-hmm. And so now I found myself with like a really incredible friend group because we were all in that same life path of like, oh, we all relocated and moved here. And so we're all experiencing Texas from the outside in instead of the inside out. And so I've been lucky to find my tribe now. But it wasn't easy for me at first. I felt very lonely for quite a few years out here, actually.
Yeah, feeling lonely. I mean, that might be the number one killer that leads to everything else that kills you, like stress and depression, yeah. Alcohol, drugs, driving drunk. I mean, all of that mm-hmm. usually comes from loneliness. When you see people at the bar drinking alone, they're not going there just for Malibu. They're 100%
they can get
going
it here.
There. Yeah, exactly. Come over. Please don't.
But his address is...
But I mean, I swear, people are going out just to drink around other people. You know, it's kind of like they're using drinking yeah. as a way just to be around people.
Yeah.
It's like they're asking not to be lonely without communicating that, right?
Right. Yeah.
And you, for your workplace, is kind of where you made your friends, right?
Yeah, since I started the position that I'm in now, I feel like I've met so many incredible people. That's how I have my friends that are here with me today. I met them in the office. So that was just like a really wonderful way for me to meet more like-minded people.
That's a blessing considering how much of your life work takes up, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you're in a space with people for 8 hours, 5 days a week. Hopefully you like them. Otherwise, your job's not going to be very fun. So yeah, we definitely spend a lot of time getting to chit chat and go run and have lunch and do all that, which has formed a lot of camaraderie for me that I appreciated. This is like really the first time I've been in an office setting. So I didn't expect to feel like I had such a social life around that in the office. So I've really enjoyed that. And I'm lucky that the office I'm in has just, it's an incredible group of people. Everybody's just so wonderful.
Yeah, that's extremely fortunate because I don't know if you've heard of the Harvard Grant study. It was like 100 years of study, I think 80 something to be exact. But it followed, I think, at least four generations from the 30s just to see what are the causes of like longevity in life.
Mm.
And they found the answer surprised them because they thought it would be basic, but no, it was even more basic than basic, which is the quality of friendships you have and the quality of partnerships you have throughout yeah. life. So that, and then even income wise, it's not that millionaires are happier than six figure earners or even just like 70K plus, but it's poverty versus like 70,000 plus is mm-hmm. where the actual difference is. After 70-ish, it stops mattering as much. But that was like my combination was like kind of like just poverty levels. Like I also grew up in a third world country, so poverty wasn't really poverty to me. Like growing up in a ghetto here was like kind of like luxury in Bangladesh. But financial difficulties, not having friends, being lonely, like those all caused a miserable life and a much shorter life expectancy. So yeah, let's get into how you just chose to be in the career you're in currently. She did quit, by the way, but
yeah,
we'll get into that. But for the most part, like 99%. Yeah. How'd that go?
I was working a marketing job for a vendor that works with real estate agents. So I would basically just travel around and do presentations in real estate offices. Obviously, public speaking is not a fear of mine. So I enjoyed that job, but I was always in this office that I work in now, presenting to the agents. And I really loved that office. The people there are incredible. And I saw that from the beginning. And so I always told myself, I'm like, man, if they ever offered me a job, I would take it. I just really love that. And my team lead, she's just incredible. It's pretty much all women that are on the admin in the office. And so I just really thought that was something that was really cool. And I definitely really looked up to my team lead. I saw her leading their awards last year. And I was like, man, I want to work for her. Like I want to work under her and learn from her. And I guess I was really good at manifesting because one day she gave me a call and was like, hey, would you be open to having a conversation? And I was like, yes, yes, I would. And so they called me in and interviewed me and went through that interview process with them. And so I just kind of landed there. So it feels like luck, but I definitely ended up in the exact right spot where I was supposed to be. And I've been there for a year. So yeah, I did just turn in my notice. Mm-hmm. I would have stayed forever if I didn't want to move back to California.
That's what it is. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I really love this office and love everybody in it. Yeah. And my team is, I mean, how often do you talk to somebody who works in an office and they're like, I love my boss? Then that never happens. And so I'm very lucky with that I have a very good relationship with everybody that I work with, but I'm ready to get back to California. So
what age to age did you do that?
I started when I was 26. I've just been in this office for a year. So okay. Just 26 to 27.
And before that, like 7 part-time jobs at a time. You're just kind of figuring things out right there.
Yeah, I had, I mean, I did a lot of like service industry jobs. So just like a lot of waiting tables, barista, worked at Nordstrom in Hollywood for a while, which was really fun. And then I got into nannying and quickly realized that that was the job for me. I mean, I loved nannying. And so when I moved out here to Texas, that was what I did up until, I did that for like the first 3 years that I was here. And then started working in oil and gas, but because Texas. But yeah, I nannied for quite a while, and I really like wholeheartedly loved nannying. That was a blast. But I think that served me really well in my position that I have now in the office, because I'm taking care of real estate agents, and so it's really just like looking out for people and being how can you be helpful to them and genuinely having that kind of servant's heart. And so I think nannying taught me a lot of those skills of just like how to take care of people and run a household and then carry that same respect over to adults.
Did you ever have angst while working some odd jobs and then kind of finding nannying? Did you kind of ever beat yourself up for, like most of us being in our 20s, we beat ourselves up for not making more progress on our creative ventures, what we want to do, or even just career-wise?
Oh, yeah. I think I always will do that to myself. I try not to, because I don't want to be that person that, like, when I find success, I'm like, it's not enough. So I definitely have found myself feeling very content along the way and fulfilled by what I do. But I'm always somebody who thinks that I could be doing more. And so I am, like, the person who will collect several jobs at a time always, because I'm like, I need to do more and make more and keep going. So I've definitely felt that way before. But I feel like I've always, because I'm just open-minded with everything and, you know, call it manifesting or whatever you choose to believe in, I'm very open to what comes next, and I trust that like I'm on the right path and the right thing's going to come for me. And I've very much been able to do that with my jobs, to where I've sort of just leveled up over time and found my way through life. And so whatever comes next is going to be even better. So
have you always thought like that?
I think, yeah, I mean, I've always been pretty optimistic, aside from like being, you know, messy, depressy as a teenager. But I think, yeah, because I learned that I always land on my feet. And I mean, it's like what's the lucky girl trend on TikTok? They're like, I'm so lucky. And if you say you're lucky, then you are. But I feel like I figured that life hack out a long time ago, because when I was 19 living in LA, I was like, I always on my feet, like it's fine. At the end of the month I break even, and there might be 2 pennies in my bank account, but there's 2 pennies and it's fine. I mean, I always land on my feet. And so I've kind of just always known that about myself, because I'm willing to do what it takes to figure it out, and I know that, so I have a lot of trust in myself.
I think that's one of the life hacks right there, like knowing the macro and the micro, right? Trusting the process that leads to just a better journey and a better life in general. Because once you think, when you think you want to make it, and that happens, whatever that making it definition is, well, you don't even have any good memories of the entire journey.
Yeah, you didn't enjoy it. It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So having that, but also, like you said, you still have that kind of like a little drive on you where you want to be doing more all the time. So that's that balance, right? Having that optimistic, trust the process, trust the journey, enjoy every bit of it, because you'll never get these back. And that's what makes the story. No one goes in a movie saying, hey, he wants to save that person and get married. I mean, that just happens and you just leave. Like, great right. Fucking movie, right?
Yeah. No arc. Yeah. Nothing else happened.
Just... yeah, because there's nowhere to relate to that either.
Yeah.
So this is how we're built as humans, the relatability going through that process. So
that's life.
Yeah. So you had that balance. Now, where does that drive to always do more come from?
I'm an overachiever. I don't know. That one's just built into me, I think.
I was just going to say, a lot of that is usually DNA.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I'm a Capricorn. So no. I think I've just always been somebody who strives for that. I mean, a lot of people would say that the people pleasing kind of stems into that. But I think because I had really good affirming parents, that just came out more in like a, I know I'm capable of doing more, so I should. And I've always proven that to myself over time, that I'm like, I know I'm capable of doing more, and so I do, and I'm like, there it is. I can do more now.
If you take anything out of this podcast, that would be the biggest point, is she's done things to actually prove to herself, forget anyone else, but to prove to herself, yeah, that she can do those minor steps is what it looks like now. But those little steps are exactly what put her right here right now, and it's exactly what will take her to the full-time dreams you have.
Yeah, that was something, honestly, that's one of my biggest takeaways from therapy when I was working with my therapist through like ADHD and all of that. She was like, you have to learn to trust your brain, because it's easy to get frustrated with yourself, and then you're just gonna spiral down and you're going to get stuck being like, what do I do next? She was like, if you can just do little things for yourself to prove that you can trust yourself, you follow through on your promises that you make to yourself. You say you're going to get up and go to the gym in the morning. You get up and go to the gym in the morning. Then your brain goes, oh, I said I was going to do something and I did it. And so you trust yourself. So then later when you tell yourself everything's going to be okay, you believe yourself. And at first I was like, that's some motivational hooey fooey, whatever.
They're tricking me.
But it's so true. And it's like, you can earn your brain's trust with like the littlest things. And then I feel like thankfully I feel like I'm in such a better place than I was a few years ago that I'm like, yeah, no, I trust myself. So yeah, two little tasks.
Yeah. And you're right to give that credit to therapy too, because that was the same for me during my therapy journey. I had also just hired like a coach at that time to like just get me back to a good weight. And the way I was approaching weight loss was just horrible. I mean, it was so strict. Every part of the diet was miserable. The workouts were miserable, twice a day at the gym, cardio, fasted in the morning, like an hour on the stairs, basically. And then just powering through your muscles for like an hour and a half at night. It took up my whole day. The nutrition was just, I mean, it was so shit for me to even process. I was just miserable the entire time. But it taught me a lot, right? The discipline of doing that taught me a lot. So that's why I hired the coach, because I also knew like just self-awareness being a bigger thing in therapy. Also, just know yourself, like, do you need someone to give you a little push at least and to learn a little bit of the basics? That's where the money for that is worth it. Once I picked that up, my therapist was like, all right, well, is it time for you to confront how to actually have a better day-to-day life, you know, because it's not going to be sustainable. I'm like, yep, 100%. Yeah. So I started cooking for myself. I started actually just eating what I would want, just keeping track and just being mindful of what I eat, tracking macros, obviously, and calories. Like literally day one, I was 10 times happier on the weight loss journey. And just from that, I lost 20 pounds. I got a lot more to go. Thanks. Got a lot more to go. But I mean, like everything I'm doing day to day right now, that feels sustainable. And instead of like reducing my calorie intake all the way down low, I just said, what's my dream body weight and muscle ratio? And how many calories does that person consume? And now all my diet is consumed around that. So I just eat what I want and make it more macro friendly by cooking it myself and make sure I'm not starving myself. And that's already led to just me being happier along the entire journey. And I don't have to think about my weight loss journey anymore. And an even bigger thing, like where she said, like proving to yourself big points in your life where your brain starts trusting you. Like even today, like just waking up, horrible sleep, was not in a good energy, like was not in a podcast energy for sure.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wait, I already know how to fix this. Like your body, fixing your body will fix your mind, right?
Yeah.
So get in the gym, do cardio, and then hit the sauna to kill yourself even more. So like an hour total of that. Yeah, already better. Like mood has completely changed. So do like those little hacks for your body and your mind gets better. That's helpful for anyone in the creative world. I'm telling you, like there's a reason why you see so many successful entrepreneurs that are very healthy. I rarely see people that are happy, healthy, and financially well off that aren't taking all of those steps seriously.
Yeah.
That's been the most consistent thing I've seen. So that makes sense. That
it's almost aggravating how much it is true that like exercising makes you feel better.
100%.
And I'm like, this is infuriating to me. That was what I needed. A little bit of sunshine and to go for a run. Are you kidding me? Like, I thought my life was over. They were right. Yeah, you know, it's important. It's something that you got to take care of yourself because it's the engine that gets you there.
And we're going to go and take your Instagram questions.
Ooh.
So you can look over it. I got to use the restroom real bad.
Okay.
I'll be back.
Here's where I run the podcast. Justin's gone now. I have full control. We're going to mess with the EQ. Oh, he has the camera hooked up so I can see it on the screen here. Is that how I've been looking this whole time I was sitting here? I'm like a really short human.
I know, when you put your leg out, I was like, you don't even fit like the whole half of the couch. Like when you put your leg.
I know, I can like sit. I can't, like, that's on my calves.
You said that way, I was like, your legs didn't even go the whole length of
the couch. Yeah, the depth of the couch is almost the entire length of my legs. I'm supposed to be reading these questions. Do I know what they say?
Yeah. I know, I've like been trying squirrel. To move so I don't distract anybody. And I can be like,
did you see this mug that he gave me?
Yeah, I noticed it immediately.
He's got, it's so corgi with the good little bow tie. It's monkey. I realized when I saw this, like what I actually look like on the couch, and I look like so short.
Yeah, the comparison is crazy. Like me to you, it's wild.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm 5'2". Well, I say I'm 5'2". I'm really probably like 5'1", honestly. And some like quarter of some inches. Pretty sure my license says I'm 5'2", so it's legal.
You legally finessed the system. That's amazing.
Legally in the same height as Lady Gaga, and nobody can tell me anything.
Okay, welcome back to the pod. We're goddamn influencers, so we can take pee breaks and get back to it. We're goddamn influencers.
We do what we want.
Okay, you've had time to look over the Instagram questions. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Do you want to ask me the questions, or you want me to memorized?
Because
I don't have them. I don't know.
Okay, I'm a goddamn influencer. I don't have to be a professional for shit. Okay.
Read me the questions. I'm a pop star.
Fucking attitude. Okay. Over. Yeah. Fucking pop star.
He's going to use that clip just so out of context. Just get me canceled.
That's a great idea.
She's so terrible.
Let me mark that.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and it's been clicked.
And yeah, by the way, she is a fucking pop star because her friends haven't fallen asleep throughout this entire podcast. Like, they've been completely silent. They're not even drinking from the bar. They're just genuinely enjoying it. You train them well, right?
Yeah. I gave them drugs on the way here.
I'm just kidding. You don't even share. I'm sober, but psychedelics is what they're probably just like.
Don't tell them about the shrooms.
What got you into singing is the first question.
I started singing when I was really little. So the first time I got on stage, I was like 3 years old and I loved it. It was like, I got off stage and was like, can I go again? And they were like, no, it's not your turn. And so I stuck with it ever since I was little. I just really enjoyed performing. I'm really terrible at sports. Anything that involves hand-eye coordination, it is not happening. So I think that was my best option. But yeah, I just got into it at a young age and never stopped.
That's amazing. So a lot of people don't like the advice you'll get is that do what you would do for a living when no one's watching you, no one's looking for you, no one is adamant on like what you do with it, how much money you make out of it. Just what do you do in your spare time, right? Like, what do you do at like 24/7? Yeah, it's like, what is on your head every single day you never get tired of, right? For me, it's this shit. For you, you found it at 3 years old. For me, I always knew this was it, but I didn't want it to be the thing because I never thought it could actually be something you could monetize on. Mm. Never, you know what I mean? Like it's like discouraging because you're like, oh, it's going to take so long to happen. You just discourage yourself from it. But the entire time, like, what am I passionate about? Like, I can't find it. I've known it this whole time, right? You kind of realize that at 3 years old.
Yeah. I mean, I think I always enjoyed dance as well. And so my sister, she's 5 years older than me and she did singing. And so I think there was a part of being the little sister that I was like, I want to do what the big kids are doing. And so I started it. But yeah, I've just always really had a passion for it. And it's just such a good expression for me to be able to songwrite and get that out. And like, it's just something that makes me feel better. I mean, today, same as you, Mercury's in retrograde. Okay, in case anybody didn't
Mercury's in Gatorade.
So we're all struggling today. But I also I was in a mood. I came home from work and I was like, I am angry. Like, I don't know why. And I was like, you know what I need to do? Like, I just need to turn on some music. I just need to sing for a while and just belt my lungs out and
that was today.
Let myself feel better. Yeah. And then I by the time Andrea came over to meet up with me, she was like, I'm so angry today. And I was like, I know, dude, I was feeling the same way, but
that's amazing. Just gotta
get it out.
So your entourage and I were just both angry today.
Everybody I've been talking to today is just I don't know what's going on today. And I'm like, it's Mercury.
It's in fucking Gatorade. Diet Gatorade. It's pissing everyone off.
It's not even the blue kind. It's not even the good. That is Gatorade. Messed up. It's messed up.
Okay. Well, you found it early on. And one of the other things, the way your passion can be shown to you is by other people sometimes. Like, just being willing to try something that someone else is doing. Like you said, the bigger kids were dancing, right? And you just took the chance at it. And now that's a major part of you. Yeah. By the way, her YouTube channel, that's 13 years old. I will link those below. They have crazy six-figure views. It's all legit. I watched it. I was like, oh shit. I was just going to watch it in the background. It's actually pretty good.
There's so many videos on there too.
Yeah, there's a shit. I was like, oh my God, I got to do this much research. You know, I'm just scrolling God damn.
I mean, you give a middle schooler a YouTube page back in 2000, whenever that was, it just went rogue.
Yeah, no, they were fully engaging though. So we'll link that. We'll also link her Spotify artist profile and we will attempt to include her songs. There's a music and talk service in Spotify. I might even be able to link your, or maybe a preview of your next song. So we'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
And the next question is actually pretty good. It's from the same person. The same person asked a bunch of shit.
She sent me a few questions.
When do you feel the most empowered / you?
honestly, through music and dance. I feel like when I'm dancing, I feel the most authentic version of myself, because I think I found myself a lot through dance. And as I was growing up and dancing, I think that gave me, instilled so much love for my body and myself. And so I think I found like a lot of home and peace with music and dance. And it really builds your confidence to be on stage. And so getting to do that my whole childhood, that taught, like, let me get to know myself really well. And songwriting has taught me to know myself even more intimately. And so, yeah, I feel very empowered when I'm singing. I feel very empowered when I'm on stage. That's why I enjoy it so much. Yeah.
That's a great answer. And her next one is kind of relates to this too. It's like, what's it like having that type of motivation in you? Like, that's what makes you feel the most empowered, creative. That's your output. But in kind of like a world where they value pay and your career more than the creative jobs.
Yeah. As a dancer, that was a struggle. Mm-hmm. It's always been a struggle because dancers really don't get paid very much at all. It's brutal out there because we're not unionized like everybody else is. And so there's no way to stick up for ourselves. So that was always a struggle, to be pursuing something knowing that I was like, okay, I'm not ever going to like make it in dance. I mean, like, I'll make it, but I will never make a living in dance. And I have a lot of friends that do, and they manage and they bust their butts, man. And it is paying off for them, but it's tough. It's a lot of work. So I think I came to a point with dance pretty early on, and I was like 22. I was like, okay, this is something that I'm going to do because I enjoy it. And I need to categorize that into my brain and say, this is not something that I'm going to try to squeeze all the money out of it that I can, because there's just really not money to squeeze out of it. And I need to enjoy it for what it is and not stress about that. And then getting into music, that's something that I'm really passionate about, of saying, okay, when I'm to the point where I'm doing these big gigs that I can have dancers, and when I'm filming my music videos, my first priority is going to be making sure everybody gets paid, especially the dancers, and they get paid their worth and their value. And so that's kind of given me a lot of motivation in this space to look at it from maybe a more business standpoint on the back end, to say, okay, this is my creative outlet. I'm going to enjoy it for what it is and not try to squeeze the pennies out of it. And then I'm going to try to utilize that to help other people so that we can all kind of grow together. Once I have this project that's made that I can love very purely, and I have this product now, I can use this to say, okay, let's turn around and let's start changing the stigma and the way that Beyonce does for her dancers and Missy Elliott does for her dancers and Justin Bieber and Katy Perry. They take J-Lo, they take very good care of their dancers. And like a lot of other artists, I want to be kind of a part of that group of people to say.
That entire question, you could have answered it from like an angry victimhood mindset, and just been angry about how things are, nothing you can do to change it. So fuck the system. They should change. They should change. Everyone else should do what I want, right? Instead, it's like a therapy lesson. You took responsibility, put it back on yourself, and said, this is how I'm going to adjust. And once I make it on my own, I'm going to make sure I'm part of the change.
Yeah. I mean, that's not how the world works, you know? And I think it went through a stage of being angry about it till I'm like, all right, now what do? We were angry for a while, but that didn't change anything. So, and people were working on it. I mean, the dance community is fighting for it. And, you know, we're watching what everybody's going through with the writer's strike right now and seeing what the power we could be holding as dancers if we chose to unionize and stand like that. So, progress is being made. I have hope for the future too. So it's also knowing that I'm not the only one that feels that way.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. You have hope through responsibility and you're taking action on it. So yeah. I love that. The other question is like, what were your inspirations and what impact do you want to make with music?
Well, I feel like I kind of answered the last part of that question previously, but some of my inspirations for music, when I wrote Done, I actually wrote it because I heard Fletcher's song Bitter. I don't know if you know that song. She's not a huge artist yet. She's growing. I love her. If you don't know who Fletcher is, go listen to all of Fletcher's music. She's killer. But I kind of wrote that song with that vibe. I was like, I want to write something that has this energy to it. And so she's definitely a huge inspiration to me. But growing up, I was like very much the teeny bopper kid. Like I had my Tiger Beat magazines and I loved all my pop artists. And so I definitely still pull some inspiration from that. era, I think, of pop music. But dance really inspires me to make music that's danceable, that's fun, that I want to make music videos to and choreograph pieces to. So that also spills into the inspiration.
That's a great point. Yeah, like what you're doing is incorporating all three of those things you like modeling, dancing, and singing.
Yeah.
One of the final questions is, if you die tonight, like right after this podcast, because that's what happens to guests, they sign a contract, they come and do the podcast, and then somehow they die, right?
That's why you made me turn my phone on airplane mode.
If that happens and you die, what would you feel like you still had left to accomplish?
Everything. I feel like I haven't accomplished a lot of things in life while still feeling very content that, you know, if I died today, I would still have peace with it and know that, like, I feel like I brought joy to people around me in my life, and I feel good about that, and I feel like I've lived my life as well as I can. But I have just so much more that I want to do, and I have so many more creative things that I want to pursue and things that I would like to leave behind. So, like, just making more music and having, like, a catalog that exists in the future that people can look back on and hopefully feel something from or relate to it, and it can help them get through tough times. That's what I would hope for.
And future ambitions you'd want to accomplish during that? Do you have like a daydream that you always picture it?
I would love to be able to tour and just do the damn thing, basically. I would like to be able to be making music full time and that be my whole focus, is that I just get to create things and have people enjoy them with me. Because as an artist, it really just doesn't get better than that. So that's the main goal when it comes to it. But I also understand that, like, art is art. So I'm going to make what I want to make. And it, once it's out there in the world, I have not much more control over it. So
that makes sense why your answer was, where even if it happened today and you died, you would still have peace with it, because it's what you're doing now is exactly what you'd want to do 5 years down the road, 10 years, 50 years down the road. That's what you'd want to do.
Yeah.
It just may be at a bigger scale. That's the only real difference, right? More people impacted. But even right now, you're impacting people. Like, you impacted me enough to where I'm like, fuck you, 4-hour set, I'm dropping one of her songs. Y'all are going to fucking love it, right?
Yeah.
So that's how much just little things you do, little things the people that love you the most around you do for you. That's the entire journey. So you've answered it very well. And that's exactly kind of like what I'm looking for whenever I ask that question. But you're living it. You're doing the damn thing.
Do you ever get really, like, dark answers, people? Or, like, you ask them if they'd die tonight, and they're like, I hope so.
Yeah, some guy was, like, basically, like, I would do everything different. Like, oh, my God. No. Yeah.
You're just sitting there like, shit, dude. We were wrapping up the podcast, actually.
Yeah. And he had a sexy-ass voice, too, like a beautiful podcast voice. And then he just drops it down to, like, a fucking Matthew McConaughey, I would do everything different.
Oh, that's heavy, dude. Maybe set him on a different path, though, by just asking that question.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure he's going to know, like, who we're talking about, but he's one of the, like, most genuine human beings ever. So I think he meant it more of, like, he's kind of, like, beating himself up to do things more and more different and, like, at the scale, right? Like, that's that burning desire we all have in us in the creative world, is just do more, do better.
Yeah, we should all over ourselves. We should be doing that.
Yeah, and that's why, like, both you and I can kind of put a stamp on therapy. Recommend it. Definitely do the damn thing, especially in the creative world. Any stigma around it, man or female, go for it. It's one of the most crucial things you could do. I mean, I would literally tell you, like, set aside a budget for therapy. You'll not only be doing yourself a service and everyone, but you'll actually be able to leave a legacy. Therapy is, like, one of those things I view. You could either do it now and be ahead, or you can never do it, and then maybe in 10 years you learn half of those lessons. Or you can learn it now and take action, because therapy isn't like you just do a course, you get certified, and you're good to go. It's more like you get the tools to just practice it every single day while you're alive, right? So I know I said that was, like, the final question, but it kind of relates into this. If you knew your death date was in 10 years instead of now, would you do anything differently knowing you got 10 years left?
No. I think I'm moving through my life right now, and I can't speak to me, like, a year or two ago. Honestly, I feel like I've lately made a lot of life changes for myself to say, no, now is the time. Like, we're going to be present and we're going to do what we actually want to do. And I feel like I have a little bit of a ticking time clock already I've put on myself, because I'm 27, and I know, like, 30, I'm excited to turn 30, to be quite honest. I'm excited to keep getting older. I don't dread my gray hairs on my head, but I do have this realistic idea that I'm like, well, now is the time for me to start chasing things. I have 3 years left of my 20s. And if I'm going to move back to LA and like go to the dance auditions and do the things, my body's not going to do this forever. And so I'm already kind of there under that clock, because I know that I'd like to do everything while I can. So I'm doing it.
Beautiful fucking answer. She's a goddamn influencer. Follow her on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. We will link everything. You'll enjoy every piece of content she's already got out. Please share this podcast, because I genuinely feel like I enjoyed every second of this, and I hope you will too. Please share. Podcast over.
This was great. You're a wonderful podcast host.
Oh, thank you. I'm leaving that part in too.
Yeah.
Bye.
Do it. Stamp of approval.